In my sermon a few weeks ago, I told you some of the story of the crew team of the University of Washington in the 1930s, who won the gold medal at the 1936 Berlin Olympic Games. They are the subject of the incredible book, The Boys in the Boat, by Daniel James Brown, which I highly recommend to you. Now, in that sermon, I told you about the idea of swing, or the experience of all eight oarsmen in a nine-man crew boat pulling together with such perfect synchronization that it feels as though the boat is alive and almost flying over the surface of the water. Oarsmen speak of swing in almost mystical terms, because to them it feels like a nearly transcendent experience of effort and rhythm. Swing is an icon of what becomes possible when people combine their talent and their strength with that of others. Swing is impossible unless you are pulling together with your teammates and aligning your effort with that of others. A team can be populated by incredibly strong and capable and talented oarsmen, but it only reaches its full potential when that team, when all of those individuals begin to work together in harmony, when everyone blends their effort with that of the person sitting in front of or sitting behind them. Swing only happens when we are truly joined together into a whole. Now, one of my favorite moments in the book, in The Boys in the Boat, is connected to this idea of swing, but in a surprising way. It happens near the end of the story, after the men are already in Berlin as they're preparing for the Olympics. But you see, they're struggling to get back into top form. It's taken them several weeks of travel to get to Germany, and they're rusty. And they're nervous, and they're tense. But rather than descending into dysfunction, which would have been so easy, incredibly, they find a way to actually grow tighter together as a team. Daniel James Brown writes about the central dynamic present in their team that made this possible, something that exemplifies the character and heart of these young men. Now, the central figure throughout the whole book is a young man named Joe Rance. And Joe had always believed himself to be the weak link in the boat. And he'd assumed that his own personal struggles and technical flaws as an oarsman were the thing that was always holding them back from attaining true greatness. And Brown writes in the book, "What Joe didn't yet know, what he wouldn't, in fact, fully realize until much later, when he and the other boys were by then old men, was that every boy in the boat felt exactly that same way that summer. Every one of them believed he was simply lucky to be rowing in the boat, that he didn't measure up to the obvious greatness of the other boys, and that he might fail the others at any moment. Every one of them was fiercely determined not to let that happen." It's among the most poignant and powerful moments in the whole story, and it captures precisely what it is that enabled them to attain such greatness. Each one of those young men thought he was the last one in, thought he was the weakest member of the team. But this belief nurtured in them a spirit of humility, which then drove each of them, in turn, to work harder, to lean in, to sacrifice more for the sake of their team, to strive to deserve the privilege of racing alongside the other men in that boat. Rather than leading them to pessimism or cynicism, this feeling like they were personally not up to the level of their teammates, the level of their peers, led each of them to do every single thing he could to ensure the success of the whole boat. In the passage from 1 Corinthians that we've been listening to these last 4 weeks, Paul talks about something that is very similar to this. He makes an analogy about the way that we are all members of the body of Christ. And he points out just how tempting it is to think that our particular member of the body isn't important or isn't necessary. Paul writes, "The body does not consist of one member, but of many. If the foot would say, 'Because I am not a hand, I do not belong to the body,' that would not make it any less a part of the body. And if the ear would say, 'Because I am not an eye, I do not belong to the body,' that would not make it any less a part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the hearing be? And if the whole body were hearing, where would the sense of smell be? But as it is, God arranged the members of the body, each one, as he chose." It is tempting to look around and to measure ourselves always against others, and to succumb to the belief that what we have to offer is somehow not needed, isn't worthy, isn't helpful. And we do this in our families and in our communities of friends. We do this at work and in the groups to which we belong. But I think most especially, we do this in church. We look around and we think that, well, we're not quite like the people we see, that we don't look or think or act quite like they do, that we don't have the same skills or resources that they do. To use Paul's metaphor, we think that the church is all ears or all eyes, and we know that we are neither. And so we begin to think or imagine that somehow that means we are not a part of the body. And it can cause us to then think that we are somehow less valuable, that what we have isn't quite as important. And so we lean out. We lean away from the community instead of toward it. And we slowly remove our talents and our effort and our gifts and our resources because we've begun to think that what we have to offer isn't needed. And as we begin to lean out, it essentially makes the whole process self-fulfilling. We interact less, and we serve less, and we give less. And then the less we give, the less we feel like our giving matters. And so it continues to spiral in this negative cycle until at last we wake up some Sunday and we think that it doesn't really matter if I show up or not. I don't really matter there, we say to ourselves. I don't need to pledge. I don't need to volunteer. Transfiguration doesn't even really need me. We think we don't matter because we're not an eye or we're not an ear or whatever it is that we always thought that the whole body of Transfiguration consisted of. But the church isn't all hands or eyes or ears. We aren't uniform. We aren't homogeneous, identical, or interchangeable. We aren't a Henry Ford assembly line or some sort of plug-and-play program. The church is a living, breathing organism, a body, and each member brings unique and necessary gifts and resources to the whole. When we begin to succumb to the belief that what we have to offer somehow doesn't really matter, isn't all that important, no one else can ever actually fully step into the gap that is created by our absence, the gap that is left when we leave. Because just like in that giant puzzle out in the gathering space, every single piece is unique. No two pieces are alike. Every single piece matters to create the whole. Let me give you an example of what it is that I'm trying to talk about. A few years ago, there was a couple at Melody's Church back in Rhode Island who was brand new, Christina and Jason. And they had recently gotten married and become members of that church. But only a few months after the wedding, it was already apparent that they were stepping away. They were pulling away from the community. They were absent from church as often as they were present, but even when they were there, it was clear that they weren't really making connections. They weren't really getting established or connecting in the community. And so, Melody had a conversation with them. And in that conversation, Christina talked about the way that she felt like she didn't really have that much to offer to the church. She said that she'd been looking around when they were there, and she didn't see a place where she really thought she fit, where she could contribute, where she felt like she could make a difference. She knew that she wasn't called to be a Sunday school teacher, and when they sat in church and looked up, she didn't really feel like she was supposed to be a lector or a chalice bearer or anything. She felt like she was the proverbial eye, and she was looking around and she was only seeing hands and feet and ears. Now, in the course of this conversation, it sort of randomly bubbled up that one of Christina's deepest joys in life is, of all things, ironing. And she laughed. She laughed about this sort of maybe strange oddity about herself and the way that whenever she was particularly stressed in life, whenever things felt like it was a lot to handle, how she would retreat to the ironing board and iron all of her clothes and like napkins and even the sheets. Because for her, there was this deep sense of satisfaction and contentment of pressing out those wrinkles, of feeling like one thing in the world was getting straight and organized, like it was getting right, even when everything else felt like it was a chaotic mess. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands of you who may feel similarly. Well, it just so happened, in that church's altar guild, they were in the middle of this enormous kerfuffle about ironing. Folks on that altar guild loved to set up the church for services. They loved to prepare the altar. They loved to arrange the flowers and make sure the candles and everything were all just right. But they all, every one of them, hated doing the linens. They hated washing the purificators. They hated pressing out everything. They especially hated pressing the fair linen, which often drapes over an altar. Now, this could seem like a small or silly thing for an altar guild to sort of spiral down into, but it had become a real source of conflict and resentment in that group. So you had better believe that Christina was a member of the altar guild before the end of that meeting. Now, this could seem like a truly silly and frivolous example. And you know, maybe it is. But when you boil it down, a healthy and vibrant church is the accumulation of a lot of small and seemingly insignificant acts performed by a lot of faithful and committed servants. And the church only really ever fully becomes the church when we realize that our gifts and talents and resources all have value and meaning. And that the thing about ourselves that we may find strange or odd or unusual that brings us a lot of joy and satisfaction is probably something that the church needs too. Like Paul says, the body of Christ is the assemblage of all different types of body parts. Eyes and ears, hands and noses. It's just like the boys in that gold medal winning crew team who each worried that they were the weak link in the team, that they were the odd one out. They could have let that feeling make them cynical. They could have let it drive a wedge into that team. But instead, it led them to lean in, to work harder, to sacrifice more. It drew them tighter together and brought out their very best because their primary goal was always the success of the whole boat. They wanted the whole team to fulfill its potential and possibility, to achieve the greatness they all knew was there. Friends, the church is just a rowing shell into which God calls us all and hands us an oar and invites us to start pulling. We're drawing this stewardship campaign to a close this morning, and I very much hope that you have either mailed in your pledge certificate or brought it with you this morning. And I hope this not only because our church relies upon your generosity, but also because it demonstrates the way that you are leaning in. And we need you here because you are a part of this body, a unique and indispensable member. You might be exactly the eyebrow or elbow or kneecap or opposable thumb that we have always needed. And we can't be who we are fully called to be at Transfiguration without you. We might function, but we won't thrive. And we certainly won't ever find our swing. So come. Come and fit your piece into our puzzle. Present yourself to Christ to be fit together into his body. Because, friends, we are many members, but we are all one body. And all of God's people said,